for joining us for another episode of Forever 39 with your podcast BFFs, Annette and Megan.
Hey, guys.
Chat with us. Hit us up on Twitter at NJ1015, hashtag Forever39NJ. The next time you're on Facebook, give us a like or a comment, or even send an email to us at forever39@nj1015.com. Coming up in this episode, we're going to talk about what a healthy relationship looks like and parents who help their grown children financially. But up first, we're going to talk about battling back from the winter blues. So Annette, I'm usually a pretty happy person, as you know. Glass half full.
You are.
And you are too. And I really, this time of year, feel for those, especially this time of year, who aren't as upbeat. And I understand because I am struggling.
I know.
I'm struggling.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so thankful that this week the temperatures are finally in double digits.
Yes.
Well, I shouldn't even say that. Like in double digits that are higher than 20.
Right.
Because I agree with you. Like I normally do not let the winter get to me. I'm like, oh, whatever. It's the winter. No big deal. Spring will be here before you know it. But I am over it.
Already.
I'm just over it. I'm
and we
so
have a little while to go.
Oh, we have the whole month of February. And February can be brutal.
And so can March. Some of the worst snowstorms we had. So I know a lot more people are sensitive to climate change than, say, even you and I are. Mm-hmm. And with the less daylight hours, all of that stuff. There's also a degree of winter blues, the seasonal affective disorder, which is way more intense. And a lot of people from depression that can pile on top of their depression. And it can be a real nightmare. If you experience that in your life, you know what a fickle thing that can be. But they are both SAD, seasonal affective disorder, and winter blues are triggered by basically the same things, except SAD, like I said, is more intense. And it can include apathy, no interest in doing things. And with seasonal affective disorder, you can also sadly have ideas of suicidal thoughts. But there are ways to battle back from all of this, ways to help yourself. Mm-hmm. Get 20 minutes of sunlight a day. That's supposed to help. Also, if you take vitamin D with K2, because that'll help you absorb the vitamin D, it's like sunshine for your insides.
Everybody should be taking D right now because none of us are getting the proper amount of sunlight needed.
And you don't realize how important that is. Actually, I have a girlfriend whose doctor commands her to go into the sunshine because she needs it for health reasons. So everyone's like, oh, the sun, UV protection, but you do need vitamin D. It's important. Get your 7 to 8 hours of solid sleep, which I did not get last night, but I plan on getting
it's
tonight.
So, I feel like that's so hard sometimes.
7 is my ideal. What's your ideal? Like if you have to get...
I mean, I can... I'm one of those people that I can be okay with very little sleep, but... I think I feel my best if I get like 8 or 9, but okay. I can function on 3,
I can,
you know, if I have to. But I just feel like I don't get the type of sleep I used to. Like, it's very, very rare for me to, like, let's say, go to bed at midnight and then go the whole night and wake up with the alarm. Like, I usually get up at some point to go to the bathroom, and that is crazy because I'll get up to go to the bathroom say around 4 and then I feel like I'm sort of up, and then I get on Facebook or I get on my email, which is like the worst thing to do, and then I'm up for an hour and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, just go to the bathroom and then go back to bed. Stop with the phone.
Annette, I totally feel you. Like, I have no problem falling asleep. I never have.
Oh, I'm horrible.
Oh my god, I hope it continues my whole life. But the getting up, I always get up because, you know, like drinking tons of water, whatever, you have to get up.
Yeah, of course.
You have to move. Even 10 minutes of exercise helps reduce anxiety and increase energy. So even though it sucks and you're like, I don't want to get out of bed and go to the gym, promise yourself when you get to the gym, you just have to do 10 minutes and you can walk out the door because it's going to make you feel better.
Yeah.
You can add light to your office, an extra light, or perhaps a fresh plant. I think that's a good idea. Watch what you eat,
which
is important all the time, but especially in the winter, because if you're eating bad food and then you're just going to feel worse for that, and it snowballs on top of each other, so to speak. Spend time with loved ones, because that's considered emotional light. Loved ones that you want to spend time with, not your loved ones that are stressors. And allow for good days and bad days, because I can be consistent. I can be consistent with my work schedule. I can be consistent with my eating, with my gym. But some days I just don't feel up to it. So there are going to be good days and bad days no matter what you do. So give yourself a pass sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing that I saw that was recommended is to, you know, take a vacation if you can and go somewhere warm with sunlight. You know, especially if you're dealing with SAD, because the whole like lack of light is really a big issue for people that deal with seasonal affective disorder.
And I think if you're out of it, say if you're in, we're in New Jersey, say if you're in Jersey and it's just so bitter cold, you almost forget what it feels like to be on vacation with the sunlight hitting your skin.
Yeah.
And how great that can be and how refreshing that can be.
Oh my gosh. World of difference. Without a doubt. I feel like I want to go on a beach right now, right?
Me too.
I know.
I would in a second. I sent my husband a text the other day. Actually, a couple friends, my sister, my husband, I sent them a text, like all these vacation deals I came across. No one responded to me.
You're like, what does this mean? Are we not going on vacation?
I'll go alone at this point. I just want sunshine on my skin.
I don't know what it is about this winter, but I just am so over it.
I know.
And again, I'm usually not one to complain about the weather, but I'm like, oh, please.
But even January, like remember early January when we got that snow and all? That was just misery to me.
Yeah, totally. I know. Well, we'd love to hear from you guys. So if you have any tips on what you can do to help get through the winter months, email us at forever39@nj115.com. So, Megan, this next topic I find really, really, really interesting. So I was looking around and I saw this survey from creditcards.com and they polled nearly 1,100 U.S. parents with adult children. And they found that 3 in 4 of them help their adult children pay for living expenses. So of those surveyed, 62% said they've helped their adult kids with living expenses. And another 52% said they've helped them pay down debt. So what expenses are they covering? Well, cell phone bills are the most popular expense that parents help their adult kids with. But other expenses include car repairs, gas, personal loans.
Does this seem ridiculous?
Mortgage payments.
Yeah. This blows my mind.
I know. It's crazy. So I actually know a lot of parents who help their adult kids with expenses, but it's something that I don't really understand because once I moved out on my own, that was it. I mean, that was it for me. My parents didn't help me with any of these expenses.
Me too.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure if I came to them with a request, they would give me money. But I pretty much never asked. I always was like, okay, I have to figure this out on my own. But I have to wonder what a financial advisor would say about all this, because one of the things that they said in the survey is that in some cases, adults are pulling from their own retirement accounts or not saving to help their adult kids. And that's definitely not good. So I thought it'd be cool to bring on a financial advisor, sort of get his take on this. Does he have clients that are doing this? And what does he advise? And not all parents are in a position to be able to help their kids. Some of them are really sacrificing in order to do this. So we're going to talk to Ken Kamen today. He's the president of Mercadian Asset Management in Princeton. So Ken, welcome to Forever 39. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Pleasure being here.
So I'm wondering, in your line of work, do you find that parents are helping their adult kids with their living expenses or to pay down debt or both for that matter?
Absolutely. I'm seeing it more and more, especially as parents are getting into what I call the sandwich generation. Not only are they helping their parents, but they're helping their adult children. And, you know, while on one level that's a really great thing to do, as a parent myself of adult children, the natural tendency is to try to help out in any way you can. But I also see from my practice that there's a lot of ways that helping out is actually hurting. So it really depends what type of help that parents are giving their adult kids.
So Ken, you mentioned that in your practice, you're noticing it more, but you're also noticing that it's hurting. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that and why in some cases helping pay for these expenses for your adult children is not a good idea?
Well, it goes back to the old adage that if you give a man his fish, he eats for the day. But if you teach him to fish, he can eat for a lifetime. And I see that in my practice with clients, because a lot of parents that are overpaying for their kids, in my opinion, overpaying, are creating enabled kids that can't really do a lot of things on their own and are not navigating the financial world with an independence that is going to last them a long time. And they're going to really be crushed when mom and dad's support goes away. So I'm always cautious when I see parents overindulging kids' whims.
Do you think there are ever cases where it's okay to help out? Like, I'm sure like certain life or death situations, or unfortunately your kid got himself into a really bad situation and wound up in jail. But are there certain cases where you say, all right, look, you know, it's fine if you want to give Megan $10,000 for some reason?
Yes, it is fine, Ken.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. There's always going to be reasons why you should be able to help loved ones. But I try to get people to break it up into two categories. One category is what I'll call blank check. There are, God forbid, things that happen in people's lives that no matter what's involved, it's a blank check. Those are medical things. I mean, we would do anything medically, you know, whether, God forbid, someone got into legal trouble. I mean, there are things that we would do that I would call, as I say, blank check. You do what you got to do. But very few things ever rise to that occasion. And if that's not the case, then I really think it's up to the parents to decide what's going to be the annual amount of subsidy that they're going to give their kids. Because that's really all it is a subsidy. You're saying this is what you're making X. It's not meeting all of your bills, and therefore we need to contribute. Well, you have to look at it. What's going to happen when you stop contributing? So it could just be that you're helping them get through this year. It could just be maybe that you're helping put their kids through school. There are a lot of things that they're going to come to rely on. And you, as the parent who's got to save also for retirement, have to ask, how much am I willing or can I afford to take away from my future to help my offspring's future? And I always try to remind people that there are a lot of loans for young people while they're working, and students while they're going to college, but there are no loans for retired people trying to make ends meet in the latter part of their life.
That's an excellent point.
And that's the lens that this has to really be looked at through.
You're almost like a psychologist in a way for these people. But say, Ken, if like a mom wants to do tough love and a dad is more easy with giving, have you ever had to go through something like that with a couple where they kind of battle how much they should actually be helping their kids?
Way more than you think. And that gets to an entirely different point, which is it is amazing how much tension and ill will is created in families when parents are supporting adult children. One, you just said it, both parents might not be on the same game page, and it leads some friction. Oh, it's your son, your daughter, you handle it. I told you I don't want to deal with it. But I'll give it another light. It's also, I've seen it happen where the sibling who's not getting potentially the help that you're giving another sibling because you believe, you know, child A needs the money and child B is a dentist and is off on their own and doesn't need the money, don't think that that might not be leading child B to have some resentment that, you know, you always did more for child A. I knew it, you know, and I see it all the time, especially, you know, when unfortunately, mom or dad passes away, and I'm in meetings with the adult children, and I hear them squabbling about, well, you got so much more from them. They gave you $30,000 2 years ago. They didn't give me any. So you got to be careful that there's not unintended consequences of trying to be nice when it comes out that really maybe someone else might be looking at as favoritism or a spouse might be looking at as resentful that no one helped me when I was young and we shouldn't be doing it for them. We all have a way of rationalizing all the things that happen in life to us. But what we're all not wired to do is rationalize when our siblings get more or less than us, because it goes back to these primal things we felt when we were 5 years old. So I always caution people, be careful of the unintended consequences. I know I'm being redundant there, but I think that that's really the important point, that what you're trying to help, you might be creating negatives. Besides all the interpersonal stuff we just talked about, look at it this way. If you're helping your, you know, let's say you have a 25-year-old daughter and the daughter's rent is more than she could have afforded on her own, so you're trying to help so maybe she can live in a better living situation, and maybe you're kicking in $300-$500 a month so your daughter could live in a better place. So when you start pulling back your help because your daughter got a raise at work, well, her lifestyle didn't get a raise at all. If you're going to pull back $500 a month while she's getting $500 a month more, she just spent the last 2 years of her life working and saw no raise in living standard as a result also. And that has some other psychological things in it also. You have to make sure that what you're doing with your adult children is not just helping them, but it's not hurting them, that it's kind of, you know, keeping them back from feeling accomplishments in other ways that they live their lives.
Absolutely, and building that confidence in themselves too, that they
can
live without
mom and dad. I do feel like, okay, so if Susie got a raise and she can finally make it on her own, well, guess what, Susie, work hard for the next year and get yourself to feel those good feelings from getting the raise.
You would hope so, but I think a lot of kids still want to take that handout from mom and dad. It's too enticing.
Or they get demoralized because they got the raise, but it did nothing for their standard of living because right. mom and dad's no longer helping them with the rent.
Or they're like, hey, we're going to get an even better apartment because yeah. now we got the raise and mom and dad's right. extra $500.
Winning.
So, Ken, to wrap this up, for last pieces of advice for parents that find themselves in this situation, let's say you are a parent that finds yourself in this situation and you actually really want to end this sort of cycle that you're in with giving your daughter or son or both or however many children you have money. What advice do you have for that parent who's looking to end that relationship?
I think that you need to have a game plan. It's never going to be good to just pull cold turkey to say, starting next month, I'm not going to pay your rent or I'm not going to help you out anymore. I think if you want to do that, you have to sit your children down and say, in 6 months from now or a year from now, mom and I are done paying these bills. So they have an opportunity to plan for that and know. Because if you do it in a cold turkey fashion, it's going to lead to not only heartache and hardship, but it's going to lead to a lot of bad feelings. And I'd also suggest that we also look at the things that we don't realize we're spending, and here I'm guilty of it. My two adult daughters are still on my cell phone plan. So there are a number of things that we do that are kind of like even out of our field of vision. If you're going to pull the purse strings back, really take the time to take an inventory of all the ways the purse strings are being pulled on before you sit and have that meeting. Because when you tell them you're going to no longer pay the rent, it'll be at that meeting where they remind you, yeah, but you're paying my cell phone and you're paying my car insurance or something else. And you go, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. So
well, you know what, Ken, you're not alone.
You're helping up with.
You're not alone with that. The creditcards.com survey said that the number one living expense that adults pay for their adult children are cell phone bills. So I think it's pretty common.
Which is, by the way, insane. Because you're paying your adult children's phone bills, you see all their phone calls on your bill. Now, not that I look. Who wants to be that voyeuristic? But I don't understand why your adult children would want to give up that kind of privacy to their parents. Because when they were teenagers, they would have, like, gouged your eyes out if you even tried to look at their cell phone to see what the chat conversation was. Meanwhile, if you pay their bills, you know every time they chatted, you know, you see all the detail.
Yeah, kinda exactly.
Kind of nuts.
And my last question is for those parents that are in a situation where their child has been sort of complaining that they're really, you know, being challenged by making ends meet and they're really struggling and mom and dad are thinking, oh, maybe we better help Jimmy out. What would you advise for those parents who haven't yet committed to it but are thinking about it? I'm assuming that they need a game plan as well.
Well, what they should be helping out with is first, not a checkbook, but with an education. They should be having their adult kids come to them with their bills, with how much they're in debt, and the parents should say, here's what mom and I do, or here's what dad and I do, and here's how we handle our bills. First, get a handle on what they're doing. Put them through a planning process. Unfortunately, our school systems don't teach financial literacy. It's up to parents to do it, and most parents don't like to talk about money. So if your adult child comes to you and says, I can't afford my life, ask them to come with all their bills, all their checking account statements, all their credit card statements, and sit down with them and show them what it's like to balance a checkbook and balance the ins and outs of their life. And only after that, you can help them commit to a plan where they might say, okay, if you stop spending, you know, if you cut $500 out of your budget, mom and I will help you with $300 mm-hmm. or something. But so you really what you want to do is help them get an education, not a check.
I think one of the most useful classes ever would be like an overall how to balance checkbook,
yeah.
what the stock market's all about, how to invest your money. Like, Ken, you could teach it. Talk about like a class that's actually worth something that, you know, as opposed to geometry that I've never used once since I
right.
graduated. But that is a real world class that I think is really lacking in education these days.
Well, I have a question. It's a reverse a little bit, Ken. Have you ever had, this is just me being nosy, have you ever had someone come in where maybe parents are bad with money?
Oh, so, my God, yeah.
Yeah, so adult children come in because yeah. they want to help their parents with their finances.
Yeah, I have that way more than you think.
Interesting.
I have people that are totally paying their parents' bills.
I'm sure you see it all. Well, Ken, thanks so much for joining us on Forever 39. And why don't you give your business a little plug for anybody who may be dealing with this right now and needs some guidance? You know, how can they reach you?
Yeah, you could look for me at MercadianAssetManagement.com or feel free to give me a call at 609-689-2300. I'm always here to chat, see how I could help.
Ken, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Stay warm. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ken.
So, Megan, I think it'd be cool to put a poll up about this. So go to NJ115.com and let us know if you think parents should be helping their adult kids pay for living expenses or debts. So we'll put that poll up and see what people think.
So interesting.
So the Huffington Post posted an article by Kelsey Borenson about what a healthy relationship looks like. And I thought this was a really interesting article, and we're basically going to talk about it. So for her article, she interviewed psychologists, therapists, and relationship experts, and they gave her 9 signs to look for to determine if your relationship is healthy. So, you know, all credit is due to the Huffington Post for this. This isn't anything that Megan and I came up with, but I thought we could sort of go down the list of what these people told her. And a lot of them make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So the first one is, you know, you're realistic when it comes to love. You know, it's not always going to be hearts and flowers. Relationships take work. And that to me makes a whole lot of sense. Like, it's not always this fantasy world that we used to think existed when we were little girls.
I think it's the fantasy world very minimally. And I think it's the hard work a lot of the time.
And that's why us women all like these ridiculous rom-com movies and whatnot, because it's all fantasy. And we're like, oh, he's so romantic.
But I heard someone say once, and this is so true, like, you see them ride off into the sunset, but you don't see once they stop the car.
Right.
Like, what goes on once
because
they ride off?
That would make the movie 17 hours long,
right,
Megan.
Right. That's true.
You don't sweat the small stuff or take little things personally. So, for example, if your spouse forgets to take out the trash, and I'm sure there's a lot of men that have this issue, you're not going to run around thinking, oh my gosh, he doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about a relationship. He doesn't care about the house.
I go through this every Wednesday.
He's quite frankly just forgetful, or who knows, maybe a little lazy, but it you can't connect it to how he feels about you.
No, but women do tend to do that.
Well, of course we do that. And yeah. And it's hard not to make that connection. Like, especially when I always ask you to do this, why don't you do it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, why is this always going to be a fight? Come on. So the other one is, you're not competitors. Couples should be teammates, not competitors. Although, don't you think a little bit of healthy competition is okay? Like, if you maybe both enjoy a similar sport. And I think that's fine.
You mean like how I always beat Mike whenever we play tennis?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's, don't think I don't tell people that. I would get a shirt with that printed on it. It's the only thing I can beat him in is
tennis.
You
should so get a shirt.
I should. Oh my gosh, that would be hysterical.
I think you should for Valentine's Day. It's coming up.
Oh my.
That could be your gift. My wife kicks my butt in tennis.
I have to order it like today.
And you could be like, I kick my husband's butt in tennis. So you don't point fingers at each other is the other sign. If you're having trouble affording your half of the rent, let's say, but you realize it's because you had to have the latest fashion trends in your closet, that's on you and not on your partner. So don't look at where your partner fell short. You look at what you did first to contribute to the issue at hand. And I think that's important because I'm sure that, yes, maybe there are times when your partner did something wrong, but you might have also contributed to that. So you don't always place the blame on the other person.
Yeah, you really have to stop and think before you go crazy on someone.
Yep.
How could I have maybe been different?
And then, of course, the other one is a no-brainer, but trust.
You know, I have a really interesting story. I trust my husband implicitly. And maybe some people think that's foolish. I trust him. He's never given me a reason not to. But I have a friend who doesn't let her husband go out with his friends.
Oh, that's
and
ridiculous.
Doesn't let him look at other girls, where I'll be like, hey, she's so hot. Mm-hmm. Like, we got in this big discussion one night, all of us. And she's like, I just think it's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous that you don't care that he goes out with his friends. I think it's ridiculous. And I actually think it's one of the reasons our relationship is so healthy, because he can come home and be like, oh, you'll never guess what Steve did. And this is so funny. And you need that time apart. And if you have
Absolutely.
Trust, like, if you can't let him go out with his friends, or I look at hot girls, hot guys. I think that's human nature.
Well, first of all, the whole thing, like, you cannot go out is ridiculous.
Right.
Like, we're all independent people at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Nobody should tell an adult that they can or cannot do something.
I hate that, because one of Mike's friends will say, did Megan give you permission to be here?
What is that?
Because I am so not that wife.
Right, right.
Like, oh, it offends me. You know, I don't like that at all.
All right, so you put each other first. So this has a lot to do with sort of going out of your way for each other. So the example that they gave in the Huffington Post, I thought was a good one. It talks about like having regular dinner dates with your in-laws, even though your in-laws are not your favorite people in the world. You do it because your significant other is important to him or her. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that totally makes sense that, you know, you have to. That's sort of, I don't want to say maybe the downside, but that's sort of one of the things that comes along with marriage. You have to maybe hang out with people that you don't always want to hang out with.
It's true.
Especially during the holidays, but you have to do it.
Yeah, welcome to being a grown-up, you know? Exactly. Sometimes you just have to do that.
So the other one is talking openly. You can talk to your partner about anything, even those difficult topics. I have to tell you, so over the Thanksgiving break, I was with my cousin. Mm-hmm. And one of her friends, super sweet girl, oh my gosh, I just felt so bad for her in a way, but then also almost like I wanted to shake her and be like, what is wrong with you? So she's been dating this guy for a couple of years off and on. And she is at the point in her life where she really wants to settle down and get married and have children. And she's in her early 30s, but she doesn't really know where he's at because he kind of still likes to have his freedom and this and that. So we were all talking to her and we were like, well, why don't you have a conversation with him about where this relationship is headed? And so she says to us, she's like, well, I don't want to pressure him. I don't think I can have that conversation with him. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, wait a minute. So you want to get married to this guy and have kids, but you can't have an adult conversation with him about where your relationship is headed. Like, if you cannot talk openly to the person that you think you want to marry, then you've got a lot of issues
there.
What
they call a red flag.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But I was like, oh, no, honey, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh. How old is she?
I think 32. Something like that. So change is good. That's the other sign.
Yes.
You're going to grow over time, of course, and so is your partner. Those in a healthy relationship are supportive of each other as they continue to grow as individuals. Let's just hope the relationship grows as well.
Yes.
Because I think sometimes that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one, and the last one, is that fighting is fair. So everyone is going to have fights in their relationships, but those in good ones don't disrespect each other with insults or name calling, and, you know, sort of get like really nasty.
I think I've said this on the podcast before. My rule in my own head when Mike and I fight is I never want to fight to win.
Mm-hmm.
I always want to fight to make us better. So if something about our relationship, our marriage, I always want it to fix us. Even if that means I come out on the quote unquote losing end, I want us to be better, not Megan to be better.
Exactly.
You know? So
yeah,
I think
that's
really important. I think it's important when you're in a couple to remember what drew you to each other. Like, did you think he was funny? Did you think he was cute, thoughtful? Listen to them when they speak. I think a lot of times when you're in a relationship a long time, you just kind of zone out or tune your partner out. You used to be obsessed with talking to each other and getting that phone call. Remember that. Remember what brought you together. And life gets busy, but you still have to remember why you're there to begin with.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, totally. Well, so what do you guys think makes a relationship healthy? Let us know by emailing us at forever39@nj1015.com.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Forever 39. On next week's show, we're going to talk about hidden things in Jersey, bailing on plans, and immediate turnoffs in life.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got a lot of those, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Have a good week, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.